This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Reza Khalili, author of A Time to Betray, the astonishing double life of a CIA agent inside the Revolutionary Guards of Iran. He is using a pseudonym to protect himself and his family, and as you'll hear in just a moment, his voice needs to be digitally altered also to protect his security. And Reza, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Obviously, the Revolutionary Guard of Iran is different than the military. It's the organization that basically protects the mullahs and the theocratic government that runs Iran. How did you get to become involved with the Revolutionary Guard before you started working for the West?
Well, I was a student here after graduation here. It was about the time that the revolution in Iran took place. I went back. My best friend had already joined the Revolutionary Guards, and they asked me to join to help with the infrastructure, and that's how they hired me.
And it's very clear from your book that your years growing up in Iran were very different, obviously, than the years once the Islamic Revolution happened there. What did you learn about the goals, the ideology of the new Khomeini regime once you became a member of the Revolutionary Guard?
Well, it slowly took shape, because in the beginning he had promised freedom, democracy, participation of all groups in the political system. But then immediately after the revolution, they started taking full control, suppress the opposition, torture and kill, you know, students, the youth who would not accept their opinion. And so it became a reality that this was going to be a much more than a dictatorship. It was religious fanatics taking hold of the country.
And obviously it became very personal, and that led to your decision to work against the regime. Explain to our listeners how that all happened.
Well, it broke my heart what I witnessed in Evin prison. I mean, seeing people of Iran treated as such, and then especially those close to my heart, I decided to do something about it. I couldn't stay silent. So I made up a story, traveled to U.S., contacted the FBI, and then they put me in touch with the CIA.
And what was your main mission while you were working for the West inside the Revolutionary Guard? What information were you looking for, and did they want most?
Well, actually, there was a good flow of information. I know that I was passing information, you know, quite routinely. I mean, 3, 4, 5 times a week sometimes. There was so much information to pass. But my hope was that I would be a vehicle. I would have some kind of an effect to overthrow this regime, because I knew it's going to be dangerous for the Iranian people and for the West.
Reza, you called them religious fanatics. So what was their ultimate goal? We hear now, of course, of the radical rhetoric of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and perhaps a global caliphate, the return of the 12th Imam, and all sorts of other things. What did you hear and see inside the Revolutionary Guard about their endgame?
Well, here's what the miscalculation and misunderstanding of the West lies. You see, they don't understand the philosophy behind their beliefs. And every administration has made a mistake thinking there's going to be a way to negotiate with these people. They truly believe what they say. I mean, they believe that Mahdi will come and conquer the world and raise the flag of Islam all across the globe. And they believe that they are the vehicle to facilitate that. And this is very dangerous.
And in terms of their work with terrorism, this is obviously an outflow of that ideology that they believe in and advance as vociferously as they can. What did you see in terms of their connection with radical organizations?
Well, it took shape from early on, and I passed on the information. I mean, they contacted every terrorist group outside of Iran. They maintained close relationship. They created Hezbollah, they created Islamic Jihad, they helped Hamas, they basically even contacted the Red Army in Japan and Germany, and they funneled arms and cash and They maintain bases in Syria and southern Lebanon, and they've been expanding since the beginning of the revolution.
You mentioned a moment ago how you were sometimes passing along as many as 5 pieces of information a week, given all that you were learning. But I know from reading the book that you were frustrated that the West didn't seem to act on most of it.
Well, yeah, that was my biggest frustration. I mean, I could see it clearly. I mean, in one, as you see in the book, in one meeting with my handler, I mean, I told him point blank that these people can't be trusted, that people of Iran need freedom and democracy, and it's going to serve both the West and Iran the best. And even then, they thought that they could trust these people, and it just bewildered me.
And what did they tell you when you asked why things hadn't been done?
Well, you know, at one point they were heavily involved in negotiation with Rafsanjani, and at one point they told me, consider Rafsanjani the new king of Iran. I mean, this was ridiculous, and the results speak for itself.
There is an Iranian connection, as you contend, to the Lockerbie bombing in 1988. Most people, of course, know about the Libyan connection. What can you tell us about an Iranian connection?
Well, while I was working in Europe for the agency and in the Islamic community and the guards, I met with the Iranian agents. Obviously, I was a double agent. I met with the Iranian agents, and they told me that Rafsanjani ordered the Panam bombing in retaliation of the downing of the Iranian airlines right before the war ended with Iraq. And they had he even talked about the Palestinian front helping with that and about a specific investigation that was going on in one of the countries in Europe. And I had no doubt at that point that Iran had initiated this this incident, and I reported it to my handlers, but they never followed up because the senior Bush administration was involved in negotiations with Rafsanjani at that time.
Hashimi Rafsanjani was a successor to the Ayatollah Khomeini, and of course he's referring to the first President Bush. Two quick questions before we let you go, Mr. Khalili. First of all, and these are about events happening right now, a nuclear-armed Iran. How concerned are you about that?
Well, it's going to be a disaster for Iran and the world. And again, the West is not understanding how serious this situation is and what the consequences are going to be. Just look at the arms proliferation that they've done. They've armed Hezbollah, Hamas. They will use nuclear arms. And the world is going to be very unstable if they access such mass destruction weapons.
And final question, given what you already described about the government's crackdown on any sort of dissent, do you believe that we're likely to see a lot more bloodshed given the level of protest in Iran, or do you think that eventually those who want to see a change in Iran will be victorious?
People of Iran, if not backed by the West, it's going to be very difficult for them to overthrow or change this government. The West needs to help them, and there's going to be much more bloodshed if the West stays on the sidelines.
Well, very interesting to watch. Sir, thank you very much for your time today. Fascinating to learn about the inside of the radical regime inside Iran. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Reza Khalili, former member of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, then a spy for the West. His book is A Time to Betray, The Astonishing Double Life of a CIA Agent Inside the Revolutionary Guards of Iran. I'm Greg Karembas of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.